What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Drance, who of course also covers the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. We are coming to you live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Happy Friday to everybody. Drancer, what's going on, man?
Not much, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing well. I just wanted to let you know, Cam Bear talked to me, and he thinks you can get to another level.
Okay.
He's instructed me.
Yep.
To do what? To get that level out of you.
Well, what do I have to do?
Yeah, get a little more intensity. Maybe be a little tougher.
That's me. I need to get more intensity. Okay. Good call, Cam.
Oh, hey, man.
Hey, note to Cam. Let me be myself, bud.
Let Drance be Drance.
Yeah, let me cook.
Now, I think we've been doing that. I would say we've been letting Drance be Drance during the history of this show.
With excellent results.
Sure. we're still on the air.
Yeah, exactly.
Can't ask for much more than that.
Hey, we're consistent, baby.
Dimitri's going to join us later in the show at his, what's the word I'm looking for? Usual time, his regular time. Customary, that's the word I was looking for, his customary time at 1:30 on Friday to wrap up the week. We'll look ahead, obviously, to the Canucks playing the Penguins tomorrow. The Canucks are on the ice at practice right now at UBC. We got a lot to get into, though. Some very, very interesting audio on the latest 32 thoughts from Elliot Friedman concerning Elias Pettersson. So let's go. Let's get right into the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, October 25th. And we're going to go ahead and just kind of roll the headlines and the broadsheet into one today, because really, I mean, you know, so often the headline is we're either talking about the result from last night or we're previewing the next game on the schedule. But, you know, they play tomorrow. We'll talk about the game against Pittsburgh. But really, the headline and the rumor, the reporting, all of that that has people talking today is the latest on Elias Pettersson, and really just the conversation around Elias Pettersson continues to be very, very loud. Elliot Friedman on the latest 32 thoughts weighing in again on this. As you remember earlier in the week, right? He, on Monday's 32 thoughts, talked about how, you know, he thought Elias Pettersson was paying a lot too much attention to social media, the traditional media, what people are saying about him in the market. And then, of course, there's the scuffle, whatever you want to call it, the exchange between JT Miller and Elias Pettersson at practice.
I've been going with kerfuffle.
Kerfuffle, sure. Scuffle, kerfuffle, yep. Whatever. That happens, and we've all had a chance to weigh in on that. And the latest 32 thoughts with Elliot Friedman.
This might be the most exhausting possible script for like a solid six-game start for the Canucks.
There's so much to get into, but that's one of the wildest things to me. It's like they've won three games in a row.
Yeah.
If they had come back off from that road trip with one win in their first six games, and they had these 3 days off before they're hosting Sidney Crosby and the Penguins,
yeah, this would all make sense.
Then I'd be like, okay, yeah, it's time for things to really, the temperature's going to get turned up. People are going to be getting very antsy. I get it. They've won three games in a row. That's what's one of the strangest things about all of this to me. Anyways, Elliot Friedman, and, you know, we'll play a snippet of it here in just a second, but I think he talks for, you know, 10, 12 minutes. Really about Elias Pettersson and the Vancouver Canucks and just some fascinating stuff in it.
I just want to make sure everyone knows, Elliot Friedman, national reporter from outside the market. So it was not the Vancouver media that made a mountain out of this particular molehill.
We are not the ones driving.
I want to distinguish ourselves.
We are reacting to reporting from the national media, Sportsnet NHL insider Elliot Friedman. Anyways, I'll just set it. I won't set it up anymore, but here's Elliot Friedman on Elias Pettersson on the latest 32 thoughts.
Even though the Canucks signed Pettersson, I think they felt there was another level or two levels that they felt they needed to get him to. I think it was felt that as great as he is, they needed him to be tougher. I don't know if meaner is the right word, but tougher. Now, some people are not wired that way, but I think they felt he was wired that way and is wired that way, but they had to encourage him to get there. And what I also believe, young Bukauskas, is that they didn't want it to be up to Rutherford or Alvin or Tockett to do it. They felt they really believe in their leadership group. They believe that Hughes is a strong captain, and they believe that Miller is a strong alternate captain, and that their group is a strong group. And I think they said, you guys are the ones that are going to have to do it. And, you know, Miller's obviously taking that very literally. I think in that practice, and I think there have been some talks off the ice, but I think Hughes is involved too. I just think that Hughes would take that so seriously as a responsibility of his is. I think you're insane if you don't think that he is trying to do that too. Now, I think there are limits. You can't go too far, but, you know, like we've seen Montgomery push Marchand. We've seen Berube push the Maple Leafs. I think the Canucks see it as it might be better for Pettersson if it comes from his teammates as opposed to the coach or the GM. I think what the Canucks have said to their leadership group is Elias needs to get to another level. You all see it, and we want you guys to get him there. And I think they see it, they understand it, and they're trying to push him there. And I think the message comes harder from some guys, Miller, as opposed to other guys like Hughes. But I think that's the goal here.
So that's Elliot Friedman, and he even goes on to say that they're specifically trying to toughen him up, and those are Elliot's words. And man, there's a lot going on there. And as I said, there's more conversation around it, right? Talking about, you know, the context of Elias Pettersson signing the big deal last year, maybe how the relationship has changed since he signed that deal. Mentions that he doesn't think Elias Pettersson's 100% right now either. Talks about his friends sending him, you know, negative things from social media and the media to Elias Pettersson. So there's a lot going on there. But I think the key of it is just this idea that despite signing him to the big deal, management also thinks there's a higher level, at least one higher level that Elias Pettersson can get to in terms of his mentality, that meanness, that toughness. That's one piece of it. And then two, that they have more or less, per Elliott, directly tasked JT Miller and Quinn Hughes with being the ones to deliver that message directly and help Elias Pettersson get to that level. And to me, that's fascinating. And it certainly puts a different light on...
Fascinating. That's a nice way to put it.
That's a lot of other things, too, but it's certainly
fascinating.
It's
preposterous. Honestly, like, because it's hockey, you know, everyone's just going to think that's somewhat normal or within the realm of normalcy, but it's wild. If you step back and just think about it, it's incredible, you know?
So my first reaction was, there's obviously nothing wrong with teammates and leaders holding each other accountable, right?
Pushing
each other to be better. In fact, that's what you want, right? That's obviously a hallmark, not just in hockey, but I would say in any high-performance organization, right?
Yep.
You want to have that internal accountability. But listening to this, to me, there's a big difference between players organically stepping up on their own and feeling empowered to say, pull a guy aside and say, hey, man, we need more from you. We're all in this together. We're all trying to get to this goal. We know you can do more. We need more. There's a big difference between that and a top-down directive from the superiors, from the people higher up in the hierarchy of the organization saying, hey, we need you to kind of lean on this guy. We need you to go out and get our message forward to this guy. Because that, like, think about it in your own workplace, right? What that means is they're having conversations about how much you're struggling and that you're not necessarily a party to those conversations, right? Like that dynamic is just completely different to me than the much more familiar and acceptable and desirable dynamic of, hey, I'm the captain, I'm going to try to get the most out of my teammates. There's just something a little strange about that. And if I'm putting myself in Pettersson's shoes, if I was in the workplace, like, I don't think that would sit very well with me.
No.
I think I would much rather just my boss come to me directly and say, hey, here's what we're seeing and here's what we need to do better. Or for, you know, the one of the leaders at the station, for Sat to pull me aside and say, hey, here's what we need you to do better. Rather than have it be like this, as released as Elliot Friedman described it in that clip.
Yeah. So one thing that this made me think of was during my time in Florida, there was a sentiment or a thought among higher-ups that, you know, was Alexander Barkov too nice to be like the Batman on a consistently great team? Well, guess what? Alexander Barkov is now the captain of a Stanley Cup-winning team and a team that's made the finals twice. They're consistently the best team in hockey across the last 2 years. And, you know, I don't know that he had to change who he was. What I do think that team maybe needed to do was find personalities that complemented him, right? Like maybe Barkov couldn't be Batman, but the club was able to go get a Batman in Matthew Tkachuk. And, you know, maybe that was necessary for both guys. But, you know, my point being, like, we're watching Pettersson, and the question we're all asking is not, hey, we need to see a tougher version of Elias Pettersson. It's, we need Elias Pettersson to get back to being himself.
Yeah, he needs to put the puck in the net.
Like, he needs to get back to playing the way he did. And, you know, one thing I'll always remember, the first camp that I covered Pettersson, the first time I met him in Victoria, that there was that, you know, training camp, like fitness, one of the Travis Green 40 skates, and he like blew everyone away.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And then he dominated the scrimmage. He scored like a Forsberg goal. Like, it was a very alpha performance. It was a very like, this is my team, I'm the best player here. And I was stunned by it. Like, it made such a massive impression on me because I was like, this kid's 19. Like, what are we talking about here? This is preposterous. Drawing that back out of him is essential. But, you know, whether or not this is an approach that will work. I mean, we were talking about it in the break and you made a good point. I don't want to steal it, but I do want to bring it up, which is that, don't these struggles basically
that's the other part of this that I want to get into, right? Because one of the fascinating things about this, I'll use that word again, right? And again, there's a lot of other words, but like something we've talked about so much, right, is this isn't just your typical slump. It's such a stark drop-off, and it's relatively easy to pinpoint it. Now, I know you've made the point, and I think it's a valid one, right, that the six-game sample this season looks different than the, you know, 30-whatever game sample towards the end of last season.
In the playoffs, yeah.
But we're, you know, still, you can go back to last year, and it's really easy to pinpoint the moment when his play dropped off. And it's been such a mystery and such a source of
wonder,
yeah, of like, what the heck happened? What's going on here? It can't just be the knee, can it? Then why don't they rest him? Is it like, yada, yada, yada. It was the heat around the contract, but then that got figured out. And, you know, we won't play the clip, and I encourage you to go listen to it, but setting up the context of what he was reporting there, Elliot Friedman uses an analogy between sales and service, right? So sales between a, you know, a client and a vendor, and then the service aspect of a relationship. And he basically says, like, when you're trying to sell somebody on something, hey, it's all hugs and rainbows and everyone's happy and, you know, oh yeah, we're great friends and the relationship is extremely positive, right? Then you get that person's business and the service side of things. Hey, they got to call you because they have a problem, and all of a sudden you're a little harder to reach. It's not such a rosy relationship, right? And as I understood what Elliot was saying is that there was basically, you know, a switch in how the Canucks started to operate with Elias Pettersson after he signed the contract. I think you could even argue in the run-up to signing that contract, right? We saw maybe a little bit of pressure get turned up publicly, right? The Carolina trade rumors were out there. The trade rumors generally all of a sudden cropped up for Elias Pettersson.
Significant hardball was played.
Yeah. And so if we take what Elliot's reporting at face value here, and
we should, he's not
very,
throwing
very
it out
well
there.
Connected. He's not. He's not just speculating wildly. I can pretty much assure you of that. Basically, what we're left with is a situation where, since Bruce Boudreau was hired, maybe like a month after Bruce Boudreau was hired, through to February of last year, Elias Pettersson was one of the most productive players in the NHL. Then he signed that contract, and then the Canucks started to play hardball with him. He signed that contract, and per Elliot Friedman, they changed how they were approaching the player. And since then, he has been a shadow of his former self. He has been, what, on pace for like 45, 50 points in 82 games.
Yeah.
So, again, I'm sure there's a lot of things going on here, but if we're trying to crack the code of why did his performance drop off so dramatically at that exact moment in time, this seems like a pretty interesting theory to me. Maybe we can try going back to how you were dealing with him before. Like, maybe that is part of, you say he just needs to get back to being Elias Pettersson. Like, maybe these tactics are not working. I know we're only six games into the season, but if we have a track record where he was performing very, very well and you were dealing with him in one way, maybe let's go back to that. That was one of the things that stood out to me is, okay, maybe this helps us solve the mystery of why his play started to drop off so much.
Yeah, and of course, you know, post hoc ergo proctor hoc, right? Like, it could be nothing, right? Like, it could be unrelated, but it's certainly an interesting insight or a look into some of what the organization's thinking, right? The sort of way that it was framed to me yesterday when I was asking around about, you know, where sort of people think Pettersson's performance is, you know, it was framed to me as like the organization sees his recent form as like baby steps.
Yep.
So there is at least some internal recognition that he's playing better, but also an internal recognition that I think is completely fair, that it's, you know, not enough, that this team's going to need more than that from a player of Pettersson's caliber to get to where they want to go this year. And anyway, look, when we think about what this all means in the wider context, right? You just have to hope that it works. Like, you just have to hope that the organization has a good feel for the player they're trying to motivate, for the personalities they're empowering to motivate him, and that it can work. You know, because the other part of this that I'd mention is you can have a plan or a takeaway, and you can still have two players that just like lose their temper at one another in practice.
Yeah.
You know, like, is what happened or was observed at practice Wednesday and I wasn't there, was that like an outgrowth of what the organization's trying to accomplish with this player, or did that happen and this is also happening in parallel, right? Like, we still don't really know. But, you know, I guess what I'd say is when this organization goes out and sheds an inefficient contract for a mid-round pick, a modest price, right? It's like, yeah, they're really good at that. They're really good at, you know, figuring out where their mistakes are and turning that mistake at a reasonable cost into either, you know, surplus cap space or like a reclamation project that maybe they can work with. When they go sign a $1 million 2-year deal for $1.5 million in mid-July with a free agent, we defer to it. We're like, hey, they've had a lot of success shopping in that bucket. You know, like, there's a ton of evidence that when it comes to like hockey moves, right, their tactics, this is a very sharp front office. When it comes to some of the departures that we've seen, the way that the Boudreaux firing was handled, right, certain things when it seems to come to like interpersonal, the interpersonal side, I think we've seen this front office maybe make some of their severest errors, right? Miscalculating how to time the Boudreaux dismissal, underrating what the response of him, you know, conducting himself the way he did on his way out the door, like the sort of public sympathy that would engender, the way the fan base would react. You know, you can see it over the course of the summer too, with like the Ian Clark dismissal and some of the finger pointing over the root cause of the Demko injury and on and on. When it's been actions within that realm, I think we've had more cause to wonder about some of the moves and calculations that this front office has made. And that just sort of makes me nervous as we react to this news and what it could mean to the Canucks going forward.
Yeah. And the only caveat I'll throw out there is that I think Rick Tocchet has done a really good job.
Really good job. Yeah.
So to the extent that he's involved in this, I think that should give people some cause for optimism. And look, this story's not going away. We got a couple people texting in like, oh, can we talk about something else? Yeah, we're going to talk about other things this show, obviously. This is a massive story. It's clearly a massive story. And when the national media, including, you know, the most well-connected insider nationally, really, Elliot Friedman, starts to weigh in on it like this, yeah, we're going to react. We're going to talk about it. The last thing I would say is...
Yeah. And we should put this to bed because at some point...
Yeah, we have
gotta...
The last thing I would say is, you know, to kind of maybe put a silver lining on what I was saying about, okay, maybe is this why his play dropped off? I wonder if from the organization's perspective, it's they're willing to go through the short-term tumult of this, right? If they think they can get an even better version of Elias Pettersson in the long run. Now, there's risks attached to that. I think there are absolutely risks attached to that. But I wonder if that's part of their thought process. If they look at the older version or the really good version of Elias Pettersson and say, that's great, but we think there's even more there, it might just cause a dip before we get there. But again, I don't know.
Yeah,
that makes me a little concerned.
You just hope they're right.
You hope they're right.
And you hope that everyone involved is able to walk that tightrope walk between, you know, properly supporting a teammate and also, you know, motivating him. And it's a very tough line to walk, as any middle manager will know.
Yep.
As anyone who's like had a friend that needed help or who they gave advice to will know, it's awfully difficult to walk that fine line between, you know, providing constructive or even harsh but yep. necessary feedback and maintaining someone's confidence and their ability to be themselves.
All right, that's the Elias Pettersson conversation here. I think we'll look ahead to the Pittsburgh game tomorrow. I mean, we'll talk about the Penguins with Dmitry. We can talk about the game ourselves a little bit in the next segment as well. But we'll go right to the lineup notes section of the whiteboard. Canucks practicing at UBC right now. As expected, the team recalled Arshdeep Bains and Eric Brännström today from Abbotsford, so they're back in the NHL after the team made the cap accrual moves yesterday with those players. No lineup changes, again, per Josh Elliott Wolf at practice at UBC. Dakota Joshua still in a non-contact jersey. No Derek Forbort yet either. So Bains draws back into the lineup, and it looks like Eric Brännström will get a chance to play again on that third pair with Vincent Desharnais. Noah Juulsen still the extra on the blue line, and Daniel Sprong still the extra amongst forwards as well, in addition to Dakota Joshua. We're going to see Sprong again soon, though, right? I mean, like, I understand there's the defensive warts and all of that, but and the team's winning right now, but...
With Brännström?
No, with Sprong. I'm saying, like, are we going to see Sprong again soon? Like,
Yes. I mean, I would think so. The club really likes what Arshdeep Bains has brought, man. And you know, that's the other part of the lineup notes here, right? Bains and Brännström return for practice today. They really just got sent down for the day off. The team could be way more, not disciplined, but, like, way more aggressive in trying to toll cap space here, right? They tolled 11K yesterday as opposed mm-hmm. to 2K, some numbers that I was able to confirm with Canuck sources yesterday. But, I mean, you could have done 30K, right, across the 3 days, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, if you were willing to yep. have Brännström and Bains miss a couple practices. They're not. What does that tell you about how Bains and Brännström here both sort of rate in terms of what the Canucks expect to get from them down the stretch, right? These guys are part of the team. I think yep. they're going to get run. I think the organization's excited about what they've brought to this point. I wouldn't be stunned, especially in Brännström's case here, to see his role expand a bit. Like, I won't be stunned if, because Canucks practice is ongoing right now, if shortly we hear that he's maybe getting some power play 2 work. I won't be stunned if his minutes peak up a little bit. I think the organization's really interested, now that he sees the opportunity in the early going, to see how far he can kind of run with this. And likewise with Bains, you know, Sprong's going to have to take his opportunity when he gets back into yep. the lineup. Starting the season in the top six, I don't think, and with a power play spot, I don't think you could say that they didn't give him a shot.
Mm-hmm.
But it certainly wasn't a shot with a long leash. And look, that's what happens when you sign 1 year under $1 million. That's the math.
All right, betting odds going into the game tomorrow against the Penguins.
Yeah, the Vancouver Canucks are obviously favored against the... Excuse me, I need to pull this up. I'm just
dragging
right. the puck. But the Canucks will be favored against the Penguins, and we'll just sort of see by how much specifically. I'm killing it here, bud.
What a tease.
Oh, man, sorry. I should have been ready for this.
Well, one thing to note is that the Penguins have had some struggles, some big-time struggles in goal. Also
yeah.
defensively, but especially in goal, to the extent where they sent Tristan Jarry back to Pittsburgh on this road trip, right? So Tristan Jarry will not figure into things against the Canucks.
So Canucks are pretty heavy favorites. Minus 175. That's pretty significant given mm-hmm. the depth of the Penguins. That's
now,
a 63% implied probability.
We should note, Pittsburgh playing tonight in Edmonton. So
it is
second half of a back-to-back.
Second leg
Pittsburgh.
Of a back-to-back, yes. So schedule victory applies, and the total is set at 6.5 with steam on the under. Or sorry, with steam on the over, you can buy under 6.5 at plus 100. Man, I mean, Pittsburgh goaltending might be dicey, but that's that's pretty tempting even in the month of October. Plus money on 6.5. The player prop stuff isn't listed yet, so I guess I'm foregoing some props here, which is too bad because it was a good night for me the other night. We're now back up.
Just go ahead and throw that Kiefer Sherwood ladder in again.
Yeah, well, you know what?
Let's roll it over.
Let's assume that we're just going to hit that. You're right. Let's assume that we're going to hit that exact same ladder again, and I'll update the odds when the props are listed.
All right, 650, 650 is the Dunbar.
It's because the Penguins don't play tonight.
Play tonight, right. So they got to see what's going on.
Exactly, just in case there's injuries and stuff.
650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can send your thoughts in. As I mentioned, Dimitri will join us at 1:30, but we got a couple open segments before then. Maybe we'll get some audio in from Canucks practice at some point, but we'll continue to look ahead to the game tomorrow against Sidney Crosby and the Penguins, and we'll take your texts as well here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.